Right, this is going to be another episode of Esports Salon, which is my industry podcast. And I thought for this one, I wanted, it's actually, I'll tell everyone the genesis of this. Even though I already have had an idea in the past to do an episode about stats and about how HLTV does things, obviously the top 20, et cetera, is obviously irrelevant to everyone every year, MVPs, EVPs. The one of the reasons I never got around to it, though, is I always thought, what's the angle, though? Like how are you going to hook people? Because unfortunately, anything to do with like maths or nerdy stuff inherently does quite a lot of casuals. And what I essentially realized was I saw an episode of HLTV Come Here that actually Loz appeared on. It was the one during the major where the idea was actually just to preview the favorites of the tournament, as far as I can tell, talk about the big things. But in doing so, if you ever go watch that episode, they made the mistake. This is how you know these guys are more rookie when it comes to making content. They accidentally backdoored in what was an entire podcast in the last like 15 minutes and gave all this amazing stuff. But that's not in any way in the title or the theme of the podcast. So that's all lost to history. Only I saw that gentleman or people who got to the end of that podcast, because it was essentially in sort of the Q&A part at the end. And essentially the gist was, since Loz himself obviously has brought all the dual swing and this sort of advanced stats out, and people obviously famously always tell Nero he has to change round swing and it doesn't make sense, even though they themselves still don't know how it works, they were having an interesting discussion about actually how Nero himself even sees dual swing as like a better advanced stat, and he wishes he could do it himself with HLTV. People don't know, maybe this will get, we'll get into this in the conversation. One of the reasons why round swing and dual swing are very different is, Round swing actually is HLTV, because you, the pleb, the second a game ends, want to refresh that page that had the thing on, and instead of it being a live in-game scoreboard, you want it to be that thing that says all the three maps they played in the BO3 with all the stats, so you can instantly rush to the forums and Twitter and type a load of shit based on a bunch of numbers. You don't realise, if you're a fan, that really is just the log of kills and stuff like that and basic stats just put onto a basically like a database and immediately put onto a screen. If they had actually time, if you didn't need them to immediately update it, they could do something like what Loz does, which is basically actually run the demos through like an AI and then come up with all these other things that you can do more things with. It's actually why what was interesting about the episode was Nero wasn't sort of like on some brand thing of like, oh my right, he's actually basically like, one day we'd like to actually incorporate this into HLTV. So in general, this episode is going to be about the stats of evolution, but I thought we'd actually start it this way as a way to introduce everyone. Obviously we've got in the top right corner Nero of HLTV, we've got B-Trams in the bottom left corner of, depends how you see it, either Twitter, X.com, or Maui Snakes fucking, he's just Maui Snakes AI is my joke. He's Jarvis. That's what Maui Snakes does. He goes, put Jarvis, pull up all the things, and then just gets no credit for it. And then Maui just uses that detail in a show. And then we've got Loz here, who, again, depends how you want to do it. He either works with like ReadyGG and does some TLDR stuff, or he's my Jarvis when I just do a show where I'm like, right, here's all my big broad opinions from watching the game. Tell me I'm right, emphatically, or very, very softly explain why I'm wrong, but in a way that the fans don't realise how wrong I am. So, and then I go, ooh, fascinating. Yeah, that's really interesting the way I'm totally wrong about that position that guy plays. Anyway, but the point is, the cool thing I thought to introduce everyone is, you all did actually come in a distinct order into the scene. So actually, Harry, if we start with you, Nero, right, in your case, before you, HLTV had actually more stats than people realise. A lot of them now are disclosed. They were just behind the back, behind the wall of HLTV's moat, as it were, and then people just saw a very simplistic scoreboard rating, and then they had the top 20 and stuff, but there wasn't as much explanation. What is your actual, why were you interested in doing advanced stats, or why are you interested in pushing forward stats? What's interesting about that to you? Why did you do it?
Yeah, I think the big difference between me and these two guys below me is that it's not a natural thing for me. And I think, you know, obviously that makes sense. Full fraud. But it was more that I joined HLTV in a different job and no one was doing it. Like, there was a bit of a vacuum in CS at the time, basically. And I always had a big interest in it. And
what were you just doing? Like features or something initially? Was it something similar?
I actually started
that?
Social media. I was doing, oh, wow. Just okay. Doing the social media stuff. And then I started doing some writing and kind of fell into it. But I mean, I was always interested in stats. I've got all the classic football data journalist books. I follow all of the football data guys, and that's where a lot of it started, is kind of just ripping off The Athletic a little bit, some of their data size. It's always the way, like the Seven Kingdoms one, me and Loz both saw.
By the way, the real secret in esports, if you want to be a pioneer, just take something someone did in another field that people in esports don't know about, just do it in esports. That's always the secret. I've done it with a million things.
Yeah, so it's basically just completely self-taught in a lot of ways. And obviously all of the complicated stuff I do at HTV is with people who have...
You've got some maths wizards, more, I imagine.
Yeah, like,
yes.
I'm never doing anything without a developer that knows more than me. So it was very much... Like, I kind of think of it as similar to the way Peter got into it, of course. Game will resign 1 second. I think he deserves a lot of credit for even
absolutely
kind of the start of the CS stats stuff, because for him, for like 15 years, it kind of was just him on Twitter that he wanted to follow. Like,
but it's weird. People can think whatever they like about HL TV rating. Before that, all we had was the eye test and looking at the scoreboard. That's all we had. Rating is, no matter what you think of it, it was still the first step along the path to all the cool things we're going to discuss now.
Yeah, and then basically because Peter was less interested in the game after COVID, after HT was sold and everything, like just kind of took a step back, there was that gap. And kind of I was just in the fortunate position of being interested enough and kind of dedicated enough at the time to just kind of learn it all myself and try and take the scene there. Because I think the big thing for me was performance stats are always kind of an important place, but they're kind of, people already have KPR and they're going to, people like you are always going to see KPR as a godsend. Whatever we do is KPR forever. So I think the big thing for me at HGTV was actually trying to get the style stats in and kind of use stats to help people understand the game rather than just this player is better than this player. And I think that's the big thing that I kind of pushed to the scene. And then that's obviously gone to a different level with these two guys.
Well, here's the thing. I appreciate that you've now actually taken my concerns about the HL TV top 20 based on what you just said and actually tailored it entirely to me, Harry, because actually when people think Donk with the eye test and the HL TV rating is better, you go through all the combing through and eventually you find, what is that, OP KPR? And then that's the one that decides it. Well, what do you know? Thanks for that. Thanks for doing that only for me. Definitely you are enlightened and don't see KPR as some master's that. Who would? Who would, gentlemen? But anyway, it's just a joke, right?
The trick you're missing is that you just need to look at it in round wins. And
there you go. Well, here's the thing. Actually, without making a big thing, that actually is my number one pet peeve with the game where we start in 1 second. He was one of the first people to make it not just the overall stat, but like the stat in the wins. Whereas actually one area of philosophical disagreement I have is, I don't care if I lost the map. If I still fragged out when I was the best player in the server, I was the best player in the server. Like, that's why to me, the word valuable in MVP is actually the real debate point. It's not actually the players we're debating. You often explain, what do you mean by valuable? If you mean valuable to the win, I think that's different from who was the most valuable player in the tournament. So, like, spoiler, this will be the maddest pull of all time for people who aren't on football Twitter, unfortunately. I probably would have given Jamie Rodriguez that golden ball back in like 2014 instead of a certain small hobbit fellow from South America who FIFA really loves. But anyway, that's my bias for a football podcast one day, where, don't worry, I'm as ridiculous in football as I am in any sport. I'm just me. So anyway, I think that's a good setup. So, and also, by the way, I'll just point this out as well. I always make this joke with Loz, which is the way that you know, actually, people say they want stats, but they'll never really understand stats. And what they really want isn't stats. They want people to use stats to help them with narrative storytelling. They want to do what we all do as fans anyway. Because I always make the joke, because Loz also did it, that you did that thing where you did that article years ago to show the roles, where you used a graph. And what you did cleverly to visualize the graph is you drew islands around certain players to be like, that's like whatever, Lurker Island, and this is like, you know, semi-Lurker Corv or whatever. And people genuinely read this whole article, I think they skimmed it, and then they went, put that player on this other island. It's like, it's a graph, bro. Like, I all I did is draw the circles. I didn't pick where they were on it. Like, I can't just take a guy in the bottom left and go, he's actually in the top right. Again, it's the top right donk thing, but no one's choosing that. They just are. So anyway, we'll go around the circle and then we'll just have the free-for-all. Right, B-Trams, I gagged and joked earlier, but actually I do think social media is where people mainly know you. And in fact, maybe some people don't even know, actually, the connection you have to Maui stream, where you've often in the chat there, etc. Were you just a guy who just decided one day to just start doing those stats? I know your style was more the like top five, bottom five. Yeah, I know everyone has their own approach. That's like the style people maybe know. And I would say in the modern day, in the same way as Harry does the round swing, you do the EEK kills, right?
Yes. It's EEK. I try to make it like sort of snappy and catchy. It's sort of ridiculous. Yeah.
Okay. Everyone in this chat is nerds. I hope everyone gets that. They're all nerds and all real fans. And then on top of it, they're just all stats. Okay.
Yes. Yes. So I'm mainly on Twitter. That's my main point of contact with the scene. And I started out, basically I watched some episode of, I think, Snake and Banter, and there was a discussion about parsing demos and how Maui thought it isn't actually possible to maintain a database and that it would become sort of a full-time job. He spoke to a guy who used to run this Cloud9 account, like Cloud9 CS fan account. And
the C9 win guy, I think he was called, right? It was something like that, right? He was a super fan of Cloud9, yes.
I think he told him that basically only parsing the C9 demos took him like an insanely long time.
Okay.
For some reason. And I had this idea in the back of my mind. And after the Shanghai major, I basically said, hey, I always wanted to start getting into sports analytics in any way. I'm a baseball fan. I'm a football fan. I'm an American cricket. Football fan. So, yeah, okay. Also know a bit of cricket. So all the nerdy sports that are basically just played on Microsoft Excel.
Yeah, yeah.
I know those. So basically, I thought it's a good way to start. Like CS is a good way to start because you have all the data already in the demos. You don't need to parse actual vision data. You have everything you need to create your own stat, your own spin on things. So yeah, I basically thought, hey, this would be a good way to get my foot in the door and start actually putting things that I always wanted to do into practice, because that's one thing that HLTV does really well, and that's why it's one of the greatest resources that we have, is that all the demos are there for free. Anyone can do what I do. They just need to put in the time, and sure, figuring out the whole pipeline of downloading the demos and then extracting the data from the binaries to something you can actually analyze took me a while. Took me about like a week to make it to basically make my first post. But then over time, I said, "Hey, I actually need to differentiate Lucky from 3D Max from Lucky from Denmark.
Right.
I cannot just keep the names. I need to, you know, link it to actual IDs of people." And I sort of am still learning on the job. I don't have a formal sort of training. Just was one of the pioneers, because I don't think that many people did that before me. So not to say that I lucked into it, but I saw an opportunity and went for it to go racing with it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I will say, to introduce Lars, look, this isn't true. This is just my biased perspective. I like to imagine what I actually did was, I was Bruce Springsteen in the Dancing in the Dark video, and Lars here was Courtney Cox, and I just pulled him out of the crowd, and that's how he became. Actually, that's not true. He was already on Twitter for ages. He was also doing like shows. Admittedly, it was in the smaller enclave of, I would call, like hobbyist content, where, like, to be fair, some of the videos only get like 300 views, sadly. But it's one of those people where I even do this as a joke. I'll say it overtly, like, I do use some of my shows as like a gradation way to introduce people to the scene. Like, it's more likely you get an invite to, say, Feed the Trolls, for example, as opposed to like straight on the Snake and Banter or some big show that has mail. Because I like to, the idea of almost like you open mic night and then you're on a small podcast and then you do the bit, then I invite you like Joe Rogan on tour with me if it all goes well, who knows. So, but that's just
audition, right?
Yeah, exactly. Some would say, I mean, if people don't know, B Trams, for whatever reason, this is a compliment and a diss, B Trams. I'm fucking inviting major winners who barely speak English come on my shows. B-Trans were the only people to actually turn me down to come on a bloody podcast. Like, chance would be a fine thing, eh, mate? Fucking hell, mate. I've got major winners out there waiting in the line, but whatever. So
I'm making you wait.
Well, that's all. Hopefully it was worth the wait. Okay, Lars, what is your angle? How did you get into this? Were you actually there the whole time as a fan? Were you doing content? Did you just really come along recently? Because obviously to fans, maybe they only know you within the last like 6 months or something.
Yeah, so the thing with me is I think I just have a niche that is extremely rare in esports, because you often get two groups of people, right? You have the technical people who have a background in programming, mathematics, statistics, whatever it is, and you have the people that are like diehard fans that like really love and breathe the game and are playing it all the time, watching the demos, thinking about it all the time. It's very, very rare that you have someone that has any overlap of the two. And I would say, like, I'm definitely not like a foremost expert in either, but I think I'm just enough, like good enough at both of those areas, that I was able to like walk into doing a lot of like corporate, not in the public eye jobs in esports, and using statistics for that. And I've been doing that for years now, like ever since, while I was at university, I had my first job doing that. But I've been doing consulting for like certain GMs and certain orgs, like suggesting roster moves based on player stylistic metrics, all this kind of thing. And then eventually, obviously, I started moving into more machine learning for, you know, all these betting and probabilistic models and all these markets, all this kind of thing, right? So I've been around the block doing the, like, behind-the-scenes corporate stuff for ages. And earlier, like, I guess this year, you could say, the start of this year, I decided some of these models and some of these stats that I have, that I'm working with every day, would be so much more useful if they were in the public eye. Like, I just think they're fantastic, you know, for how well you can break down a player, get to know the roles they play, do all these.
I
mean, sort
but
of
if people don't know, I actually think the craziest one isn't even like what we do on our shows on Twitter. It's people still don't do it. I keep telling them they don't do it. If you go to ready.gg and you go into like the, I think it's called lab area, there's a thing called roster simulator, and you can quite literally do your dream thing of what if Insane joined Furia and put him in the right role, and it'll tell you not only like the role fit, would it make sense? It'll tell you, does he play the same CT position? It's actually what every fan wants. They just don't know this tool exists, unfortunately.
Yeah, and so I've been making these things for years now, essentially. Right. But there was never an incentive to go public with it, right? Because if you think about where the money is in esports, unfortunately, it is like, you know, selling these statistics to the highest bidder, like whether that's GMs or whatever.
Yeah. TOs or teams or whatever. Yeah, absolutely.
TOs, yeah, exactly. And so I sort of figured out pretty early on that, like, if I want to do this, I'm going to have to do it in my spare time. So, like, most of the work I'm doing with ReadyGG, I'm doing on the weekends, like, yes. Almost... Like, obviously, I'm getting compensated for it and stuff, but it's entirely, like, my own drive that's making me want to do all these podcasts, all of everything.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I just love it that much, you know? And I think there's just so much... Like, what I've currently showed everyone on, you know, the podcasts we do, Roster Mechanic and all that, that's, like, the tip of the iceberg for what there currently is existing that, like, people like me are maintaining behind the scenes. And, yeah, I hope that over the next, like, few years, my personal project is to dredge as much of it up to share with you guys as possible. Because there is some gold down there just waiting to be uncovered.
Go on.
I just always say with Lars is basically, he's the answer to the questions I've been asking for like 5 years, basically, where it's like every time I ask a dev or something, it's just like, oh, can we do this stat? It's like, yeah, we could, but this reason and this reason and this reason. And then Lars just has it and just has had it for 5 years, basically. So it's been great seeing him actually go public. Because I can't remember the first time we spoke, but it was a long old time ago. And I think it's just... Especially those stylistic stats are just so huge to actually have in the public eye.
Yeah, I think we met actually for the first time at the 2022 Antwerp Major, Harry.
Were you not at Antwerp?
No. I met some of your like TLDR friends or whatever. At Antwerp. But yeah, ever since then, obviously, Harry and I, we've been like friends for quite a few years now, I would say. But obviously, we haven't really had any chances to like collaborate on anything up until maybe recently. You know, there's some hope there. But yeah, I think. Some of the things that I have, that obviously you said, like, I've got the answer for some of the questions that you've had for quite a while. Like, what I've realized is that there is no incentive for the majority of people to drive for those things. And so I figured out, like, you know, I've got just enough, like, technical skill to be able to do all of this myself. And if I don't do it, no one will. So you might as well just do it, you know, like, don't wait for permission. Just, you can just do things, you know, especially in the modern era with all the resources on the internet, like... You know, if you have a dream, just follow it.
Yes.
You know?
By the way, that's also why I'm not even being derogatory when I say like hobbyist. Like, I think actually, that what people don't realize is if you don't start doing it like that, you'll never become a person who does content. And yeah, not everyone's unfortunately going to take off and have loads of views, but the odd person will get through. I actually do think merit is rewarded in the esports industry, but it's like you say, you have to just, if you think something should be done, then you have to be the one to do it. Like, you can't sit around and hope someone does it or go, yeah, I'm pulling. If you don't do it, our chances are it won't be done. Here's a way I thought we could open it up, and then there's a bunch of ways I can steer it later. What he just said there, Loz, about how to him he's like one of the few people who essentially has like the technical understanding but also was actually a fan of CS. As a random aside, because this will lead into my point, that's actually, if people don't know, where the real beef between me and the Game Will Restart 1 second comes from. I will give him this tiny olive branch. He obviously isn't an English first language speaker, so maybe he inferred some different context from this statement. But what happened one time was, during one of the times, don't worry, we all did did this 12 years ago too, where he gave an MVP to someone I thought shouldn't have it, probably off the same thing, like on the maps one, I don't know, maybe Config carried that one in Mega Skill, whatever, I forget which exact one it was. There was one of those times where basically I made a tweet and I think he thought I was subtweeting him, and I was, but what he didn't realise is I included myself in the same bucket I put him in. So I essentially once did a tweet where I actually, every now and then I get a lucid thought, gentlemen, I actually presciently saw this discussion we were having now essentially 12 years ago, and I said something along the lines of, the problem we have in esports is there's two groups of people. One group are fans of the game who know the game really well but have a very limited understanding of stats and mathematics. By the way, in that case, I'm including myself in that group, aren't I? Because the joke is, at the time, it was only that group. And then the other group are people where they have shit-hot maths and programming and sort of a theoretical understanding, but they don't know the game. They've like just come into the space, or they're a casual. And I can tell people, there wouldn't be a point doing an episode of this. One of the other reasons I didn't do an episode like this in the past was, years and years ago, like 12, 13 years ago, I met people who already had stats engines in Counter-Strike, where actually, to go to the Beatram's point of why this is more like something like a baseball, the most amazing thing I always tell people about Counter-Strike is, if you actually pass the demos, it's way better than any sport that exists, actually, because since we have the actual engine of what's happening, like essentially the physics model, we can chart every bullet fired, the angle, the damage, the percent. You can do everything in a way that in the real world, if you don't know, they're still struggling to do things like put chips in footballs and track the offside. And like, there's so many things in real life that are actually harder to do. So the problem I always saw was, I saw both groups of people, and there never was the fucking Blade Daywalker that somehow had everyone's strengths and other weaknesses, actually, until some of you guys came along. Even though, as pointed out, maybe it's in different gradations or levels of magnitude how much you are one or the other. But I also think, like I said earlier, the fact that everyone in this call is already an authentic fan and then has differing levels of stats and coding understanding. What do you think on that? Like, because that does seem quite significant. It's basically why we're able to do this call now, because people have been able to pair the two to some degree. It seems like it's important, right? Because I can tell you, the people who were just the coding people, well, I actually killed those guys, by the way, because some of these engines, by the way, genuinely could do everything like 12 years ago. It's because it could do everything, they weren't a fan, so they didn't know what to narrow it down to. And they even used to tell me, hey, you could type in anything. And I would be like, what can I type in? Like, what particular bullet should I track? What thing? So they didn't understand the narrative. Because I actually do think, to tie into something you guys are saying, the joke I make about Beatrams and Maui, that is actually sort of what people want. They don't really just want a massive database of stats. They want to have a discussion like, is Imma overrated in his roles in Na'Vi? And then they want something statistically that tells them one way or another, does that seem like it's a real topic? Is it a fake topic? Are we imagining it? Did the demos show it? So what do you think about this idea that we have to pair like maths and coding with understanding the game as well?
They definitely want that, and that's personally what I try to provide. Like, it's one thing that I see with many people who try to, maybe not many, because there's still not many people who try to emulate what we do, is they just put out numbers and I call it, here's a numberitis. It's just, hey, here's a top 10 in, pick a stat, I don't know, chickens killed or something.
Yes.
Why should we care? Like, what's the point?
That was a real TO stat I've seen before, bro.
Yeah, scope.gg, shout out one time.
Okay,
yeah.
Okay.
I remember you guys. That's why I try to at least make my points tied to a narrative, or like find a story to support my posts. It doesn't... sometimes I just put out a top and bottom list because I just like a stat or develop something new. But I try to at least point out the outliers who I find interesting. Like a year ago, of course, Yabby was the guy who had the most kills on while backstabbing people, which is funny because he did that to Kadian.
Sure, sure. So, I see the narrative connection. Okay, I like that.
Yeah.
Okay, memeology coming in here too. I like it.
Yeah. So basically, there's no point in just putting a stat out there and saying, hey, here's the number. The people won't know what it means. You have to tell them and you have to explain, this is why this number's cool. I think that's what Harry does also really well in the stuff that he does, like the narrative part of it.
Yeah, I think, I mean, I'd kind of add a third one to the kind of, you have to be a really big fan and you have to be a really big kind of technical person. Obviously, the technical person is like, if it's a skill tree, it's my weakest one. But I think the third one is like presentation as well. And I think I've obviously like going to uni and stuff. Like, I think I just got a knack for writing. And I think especially in CS, like that is a third kind of bit on the Venn diagram that is also really hard to hit, because you've got to be able to present kind of what you're finding. Because I mean, like, if you look at like the hits on HTTP stats pages, it's nothing. Like the reason it's so hard to convince people that it's worth upgrading stuff like that is because people don't care. Like, yes, it's such a small minority of power users who are, yep, scraping it or going like 100 times a day, but it's such a small group. You have to kind of take everything you know and kind of put it into a graph and make the graph easy to read for someone who hates graphs. Like it's, and I think there's a lot of stuff out there in terms of like stuff I was reading back then that was kind of always inspiring me to just even like little things like making one bar out of 20 red and just having a player name on it. Like that, having that versus the stuff you see on Twitter all the time.
To catch your eye or something, yeah.
Yeah, you just want something.
If you notice, by the way, the way Loz does that is he has the actual graph. He just removes all the other names. He just puts like other names he's compared or one team's names. And it's a similar concept. I actually think that as a downside, even though people beg for the graphic with every name on, when it's every name, don't we all just get lost again? In fact, there's every name there and we're not sure where we're supposed to be looking. We almost need someone to point and go, look there, like Ricky from TLG back in the day. Shout out the old school reference, keep going.
Yeah, so it's exactly that. I think it's about kind of telling a story with numbers, and obviously that opens stuff up to criticism and whatever, because whenever you are doing that, it is an interpretation. Like the stats you choose to kind of tell a story, like people joke about it, but you can obviously,
they're obviously right. Here's the thing, there's a grain of truth in Nero. You obviously have selected a stat for a reason. Their problem is their reason, they assume, is you love or hate that player, which maybe that's not quite true, but there's obviously, yeah, we are by definition selecting stats for a narrative purpose here and a conclusion, right?
Yeah, of course. And I think, I mean, the irony is that kind of the reason I got into stats was always the stylistic stuff. Like that was always the stuff I was more interested in. And then kind of because HLTV is what it is and kind of how big the awards and the MVPs and the EVPs and everything, like it just kind of made sense for me to start helping out. Like it's not what I would have chosen, because I mean, as you can see, Sid, so that's kind of all people think about you after a while is the performance stuff, because ultimately that is subjective, because you are always looking at the metrics that are important. And for HLTV, it's the ones that have a lot of kind of history and backstory and everything. Like you can't break with 20 years of criteria. It's not my personal opinion all the time, but it is the kind of, we're following the criteria. And yes, that's what I think you always give us at least credit for. You're normally challenging the criteria, not the people. And I think that is the right way to go about it. But yeah, because I think the style stuff is always more interesting.
Of course. Like
we all know, whatever you do, Don Kazai are in the top right. Like you can spend years, like Luz, making an AI model for Dual Swing. Like, we still know who the best players are.
Yeah, yeah.
Like realistically. So I think that's always there. And to open up a little bit, I think B-Trans on broadcast is huge as well. And I think more people...
I mean, I'll give people the example. I can tell you when I was at the event where I did the core stream, which was the Blast, what was it called? The Blast Fort Worth one. That was the one where people... Blast Rivals Fort Worth. People don't know, B-Trans was the one who came up with the stat, which literally on screen shaped the entire match between Na'Vi and Vitality, where when Na'Vi had that 11-1 or whatever it was, CT half on Nuke in the opening map, once they'd reached like 10 rounds or something, there was a stat on screen that said, when teams go 9-0 rather on Nuke, in CS2 history, it was something crazy, like 71-1 times was the win rate. Like it had only been lost one time in the gag being it was Aurora that lost. And then obviously that, like live as that was like in the first half, it showed that stat. And then you all got to watch the second time it had ever happened, which was Vitality did the unbelievable comeback and then won in OT. So I think that's like a great example, by the way, of where these stats can even interact with the live broadcast.
Yeah, that's exactly what my point was going to be, is that, I mean, we all love the performance stats, we all love arguing about the top 20, but kind of, I think the broadcast is the huge place where CS needs to improve, because like in other sports, you know, like even cricket or something, it's like, how many times did this exact thing happen? Like people just love stuff like that. That is the way to kind of get a casual person invested. And I think once you have the demo database that these two guys have, like literally any question is answerable if they're not like at uni or doing their day job. Like it's literally that simple, and it's just a bit of time. And I think broadcasts are missing out when they just put up a graphic of someone's KD or whatever. Like it is getting better, I think, showing positions and stuff like that. But I think it really is kind of limitless with what we can do on broadcast.
I can tell you, as someone who used to be an analyst, if I was on a desk tomorrow, I would love it if we had those like graphs that Lars basically gives me on the show I do with him. Like, I think there's so much more you can get out of that and so many more interesting conversations and points of comparison than just vaguely talking about what role someone plays or how you think they perform. I think that's actually the joke is broadcasts want to use screens and stats. It's just they use such simplistic ones, they reduce the conversation. I think that actually expands the conversation personally.
By the way, just to butt in, like one broadcast innovation that I'd love to see is prior to every match have like a, you know how one of the observers does a pan through the map, like goes through that, just have 3D graphics popping up of, hey, this is where the upper plays, this is
right.
The door player on Nuke is whoever, etc. I feel like that would be a great way to actually show, because you are able to go on the map and actually show people, hey, yeah, around here, this is like a slam dunk, and I would love to see that from one of the TOs.
Yeah. But it's weird, I will tell you, they think their version of that, even though it's absolute cancer, I can tell you as a fan and an industry person, I won't say which broadcast, we're all going to know, it's the one where at halftime they show that image that just shows you every single pathing of all the players, but simultaneously, like some nightmare feel. Again, what am I supposed to get from that? I'm watching everyone. That's one of those examples of where it sounds like someone did what Big Time's just asked there, but they missed the whole point of how to make it narratively tell a story. They just gave me all the data and fried my brain, basically.
It's basically a modeling problem, isn't it? Because like the thing with a lot of these stats and with a lot of data in general is that like CS is so rich in terms of the amount of data you can access, but where we're really poor actually is in good useful models that can provide us with some information like from that data. Because like right now, I mean, everything is a model. Even like your eye test is essentially a model, right? You're making predictions using some evidence that is just going through your brain, and that's essentially the model, right? And like things like roles, when we talk about roles, that's also a model, right? We're thinking, you know, they play these positions, the average, say, KPR in these positions is this, and so we expect this player to perform at like this level. This is all modeling work. And I think in general, like the data is there, but the models kind of aren't. Not many people are thinking in this kind of way. And I think that's maybe the main like next step for stats and CS in general, is rather than just having raw stats, like you just mentioned, you know, all the pathing, all like the utility being thrown, like that's kind of meaningless if it's just all thrown in your face at once. What's way more useful is if maybe you turn it into like what Btrams did a while ago. He made those like 3D graphics of like the heat maps of where kills happen on certain maps, for example. It's like the amount of information that a human brain can get from that versus what you're seeing on those graphics where there's just random movement everywhere is so much greater, because it's actually informing you about something that you're already looking for. Like it's answering a question that someone actually has instead of giving you an answer to no question, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, it's like even... like just, I think the classic example of a broadcast is just the head-to-head graphics. Like if you think about head-to-head in sports or like some of the more advanced stuff, like it's telling you something about how, when they're going to match up, what happens.
Yes.
Like in cricket or whatever, it's they're telling you something about what you're about to see. Whereas like when you just get KD in the last 3 months, it just doesn't mean anything. Whereas if you've got Btrams giving you, you know, like Molodoy's really good in all the AWP jewels, for example, like that just gives you something that you're going to then watch out for in the map, and it's going to make it kind of more interesting and just get someone to not just be looking at the crosshair for an hour and just kind of following along blindly.
I thought one way, again, is a way of introducing your work, but we can have a discussion about modelling and why it is significant, what we can do with it is, let's discuss the three things that each of you are famous for in that sense. So Nero, right, when you actually did round swing, even though I don't pretend myself to know because I don't know the exact formula, it's the same as HLTV rating in that sense to me. The reason why, again, I fundamentally agree with it existing is, like Loz says, by the way, when everyone says we're using AI to do all this, spoiler, your brain was the AI before anyway. So the idea is, if I'm being I'm arrogant because I have Thorin 8.0 or whatever, and someone else has whatever their brain is. So, but essentially, your brain's already modeling anyway. One of the things, obviously, that Roundswing is doing is what we've all complained about scoreboards and stats in the past anyway, which is actually 20 kills isn't 20 kills. It depends on the map, it depends what position you played, depends did you get them in ECOs. Then there's even modern day stuff that's interesting, like actually ECOs aren't what ECOs were in 1.6. sometimes that has its own fat. So essentially, one of the things about Roundswing is, even though it's the number one complaint, it's actually intended to not just be one-to-one representative of the kills and the deaths. The whole point of it is to shape a model beyond that. So give us a sense, without being too nerdy on this, like, what was the vision of what Roundswing would do? Like, essentially, it would try and do something similar to what I'm saying. Like, if someone had a 20-kill performance, it might give me a sense of, like, was some of this sort of empty calories? Was this, like, really significant? I mean, obviously, the ones that you always get your shit pushed in for is when someone has, like, 12 kills and 10 deaths. But then if you actually watch the game, the amount of times Roundswing is right, and the 12 kills were, like, 12 unbelievable kills, or, like, he just single-handedly won two rounds for them. So what were you trying to do with Roundswing?
Yeah, I think it's exactly that. It's just, we all know, like, we all know when we're watching a game that every kill's not equal. And I think Roundswing is just kind of the simplest way. I mean, maybe a lot of people would not call this simple, but compared to Luz's version of the same, that is much more simple. Like, we are still just reading kills and deaths on a kill feed. We're just assigning kind of value to each kill based on a few things, like if the other team's on eco, or if you're in a 1v1 clutch, obviously that duel matters a lot for the round outcome. Like, it's literally 50-50 in some situations, versus kind of a 5v5, that's only swinging the needle 20%, not 50%, right? And all you're doing is just putting a value on that from what we have available, and it ends up with this round swing number. And I think those kind of examples are always funny, because it always ends up like, okay, I'm going to look at the demo of this. This is a joke. Like, this shouldn't happen. You shouldn't have 20 kills in negative round swing, for example. Like, that happens a lot. And I think we're seeing it with people's reactions to Lethify rating, face it rating, which are kind of similar as well. It's the same thing. Everyone's losing their minds about face it rating because it's the same thing. Then you open the demo up and this guy's got 20 kills, like 10 are against tech nines and soft armor. And some of them are like, they've lost like 3 1v1s, which could have flipped the game. And it's I'm not saying it's a flawless model. I'm just saying that the goal for something like Roundswing is basically to be as good as a good person's eye test.
Yes.
Watching the POV demo, because so much of the criticism comes down to people thinking that they've got this like sick eye test, but you're watching 10 players, the observer's choosing to pick the person most likely to get kills. So when you're thinking of a player's performance from the game you just watched with the observer, you're actually remembering their highlights. Like, you're naturally remembering when they're playing well. You're not thinking about if their deaths are losing the rounds, because you're just like, oh, what a sick entry by Flames, but you're not noticing that Flames is killing the same guy every round. He's losing the site, or going one and done on CT side. That's bad in round swing.
Yes.
But on KD, you look at it and you might prefer the player that has just the higher numbers, because subconsciously we're watching the game and we flick down to the HUD and it's got KD.
Like,
it's impossible to kind of isolate your eye test from the KD, because you're always so aware of what players' KDs are. And I mean, that's a whole different thing about kind of how fans look at round swing. But yes, ultimately it was just, and it was not unique as well. It was not kind of invented out of my brain. I think least firing is pretty much the same thing, really. So obviously there's lots of decisions that go into it that are different, but ultimately it is just least firing. And I do think it's improved kind of how we think about the game a lot. Just it's taken time for people to get used to the idea that kills aren't always king.
I mean, I always tell people, I don't pretend when I say eye test, by the way. I when I say that, I also mean I actually said something like 25 years of experience as well as watching the game. But like, I would never actually make an insane judgment just off like the live VOD that I'm watching. Because as you say, what you're actually being shown is the tiny part of it that essentially a producer himself is actually making a qualitative decision on what he wants to show you to tell a story. And so I actually always tell people, if you ever want to really get in on a player, like anytime you ever see me make a video, I did one last, what was like 2 years ago, about insane at the end of 2024. That's one where I've gone and looked at like 15 POVs, you know, where you can watch every round the guy plays, and then you watch the bad games he plays and the good games he plays and the ones where he's on the wrong map. And the amount of effort you actually have to put in to even do the eye test is actually also why I'm glad these tools and ratings exist. I don't have time to do that for every player, but I'm going to have to try and talk about them all. So it definitely helps like streamline the process. Right, B-Trams, in your... Oh, go on, were you going to say something, Neil?
I was just going to say quickly, I mean, it's kind of, I can't remember which book it was I read. I think it was a Rory Smith one, like back in the day, but it's like the point of stats are to save time, right? Like, like round swing might not be perfect, but you do not have time to watch a POV demo of every game on HLTV. You just don't. And if it points you in the right direction, like someone like King T was loving 3.0 when it came out, because it stopped him watching shit demos every time because someone just got ecos. But yeah, it could just watch, Roundswing can watch so many games so quickly just from a log file. And that is its main advantage compared to, you know, a fan's eye test, ultimately.
Like, since we're on Harry's work and a big part of it is 3.0 and rating, I feel like rating itself is sort of not necessarily a fool's errand, but like an impossible thing to achieve, because you're trying to make this one stat fits all thing. I know that Foreign pointed out that, hey, Carrigan got these two USP kills, and that's insane. You cannot measure that with stats. Like, you can, but whatever.
It's very much rewarded in 3.0. But
yes, yeah. Yes. It's just the average of, over every single round, whatever. The thing is, you cannot really make a one-size-fits-all stat for everything. You need to measure for something. That's why rating is insane as a concept to me, because yes, you cannot really measure the same effectiveness of an AGL, and maybe like you need to say this is a rating for fragging or yes, for firepower or for utility. That's why these sub attributes are very good, and that's why what Luz does on ready.gg yes, with the parameters for every single player in different parts of their game. That's why I think that's the right way to go about it. But rating 3.0 is, you know, widely acclaimed, but in my opinion, it's impossible to make a perfect rating 4.0 that's yeah, gonna tell you the real truth about everything.
Yes.
One thing that I also wanted to mention is like almost everything can be distilled down to kills minus deaths per round, right? Like, good players get good frags and die
generally little. Yeah,
generally. So like, I think I did some sort of an article when we correlated the stats on the team page on HLTV with round win percentage, and I think the design stat of kills minus deaths per round correlated like 99.6% with that. So yeah, everything is K minus D.
I'd even say I think the it's not even that it's a mistake to do it. We need all these things as the point. It's not at one or it's both and, isn't it? And the real problem with the HLTV rating is it's not that it can't do that. Nothing could. It's that people want there to be a god stat that just tells them it. Like, I would give the obvious example if people get this point, a geopolitical one. It's like when Americans start telling you if your country sucks based on your country's GDP, and it's like, brother, do you know what goes into that stat? Like, I'm sorry, when I'm sat in the Amalfi Coast, I'm not really thinking like, but did you know, Thorin, that the state of Minnesota has a job? Who gives a fuck, mate? Like, in that moment, I want to have the sun and some quiet. So, like, that can't be measured in your magical stat about quality of life. You're just doing stuff like, am I above subsistence to not starve to death, which certainly is valuable in the same way as we want to know who generally was the better one, but it's not helping me model life itself, is it? No, I agree. By the way, B-Trams, I actually think one area where actually the EEK thing you've done recently is sort of in this vein. I remember one of the most interesting, because if you notice, this is how I think actually people engage with these stats. I remember very famous ones that connect narratively to something. So in the same way as Nero did do the reason you could say that Morrissey is better than Ziwu is because Ziwu wasn't having as good performances in arena matches, which surely are the ones we consider the premium, most important ones. Similarly for you.
I always remembered. There was a long
listen,
that.
It's all good. It was years ago now too, but whatever. The one that I always remember with B-Trams is when he did the stat. He was the first person, I believe, showed that when people said Blame F was a beta, it's like, oh, he is, but he's also equally as good at killing people that have guns as well as the ones that don't have. He just does both. That's the point. People did treat it before like either he should be the rating fraud and it's all empty calories, or he's not ever doing baiting at all, bro. He's just a really good. And then the stupid thing was, it turned out it was just both, wasn't it? Like, that was one of those ones, right?
Yeah, definitely. Like, you need to find a story to support with your like. First, you find the story, and then you verify it. That's basically yes, my process. Usually, Maui says something, or whoever I'm working with tells me, "Hey, check this out," and I go into the demos and find it. That's the simplistic way to look at it.
I have a joke like that, by the way, that goes, here's how I decide whether I hit retweet on a B-Trams post. I look initially and like top five, oh, one of my favorites is like top three, but then I'm about to hit retweet. It's like, oh shit, one of my other favorites is in the bottom five though. You know what? Maybe I give this one a miss. You know, there'll be other stats. It's all good.
I need to split them up into two
yeah,
separate
exactly,
graphics.
Exactly.
And like make a,
it's like, oh shit, Donk's a fraud on this one. You know, actually, we'll give this one a miss. Not every stat's important.
Yeah. Make a B-Trams underscore foreign, just a separate dedicated account only to
by the way, similarly though, what was your thinking of why EEK? Why is that interesting to you? This EEK, was that what were you trying to accomplish with that?
Basically, it's economically adjusted K-D, so kills minus deaths. And I feel like it's a very good stat to show firepower. I would say it's sort of the foreign rating, maybe, because you preach KPR and you basically add DPR to normalize people being aggressive and dying loads. And I feel like it just sort of passes the eye test. I feel like I took inspiration from the tiering of guns, because you can tier the guns into here's a basic pistol, here's the Deagle, here's regular rifles.
By the way, one thing I think this accomplishes, tell me if I'm wrong, I also like this because actually it does mean that if you are a donk in a scuffed spirit and Zeewoo's in the greatest team of all time, it'll somewhat like attenuate the fact that maybe Zeewoo gets more guns and has opponents that are easy to, you know what I mean? Doesn't it sort of help with that a bit as well?
Yes. It's definitely adjusting for economy. So if you stomp people on ecos a lot, these kills way less. I feel like I want to say that it's 90% of dual swing, but way more interpretable. With all due respect to Luz, it's just I can just frame it as this guy got two more kills than you would expect over this map or over 24 rounds, because if you look at it per round basis, it's like fractions upon fractions. So it's better to normalize it over a bigger time frame. So yeah, basically I'm trying to solve firepower by looking at just K minus D, and it's not perfect, because you obviously have the team play aspect. You have the fact that some deaths are traded and you need someone to die to advance onto the bomb site. So it's definitely not the solution to the firepower problem. I feel like dual swing will be closer to that, but I feel like it's a good intermediate stat to get people into analytics and basically say, okay, I understand that. Let me maybe look at dual swing and see what's it like with trades attached and stuff.
Yeah, I think it's basically, because obviously eco adjustment's part of 3.0 as well. It's just there's so much that goes into trying to get this one number stat that is obviously never going to be perfect. And I think what EEK is basically just, sorry, EEK. That's not going to catch on, by the way.
We'll try and make it a thing.
I think it's basically just a way better interpretation of it, because obviously on HLTV, you can click eco adjusts and subtract the kills minus the deaths. Like internally, I do look at kind of eco adjusted kill differential for the same reasons. Like we've all done the same kind of round win percentage thing and found out, oh, there is that one. And it's you're just kind of looking at it. But then it's so much easier to understand when you're looking at it in terms of, okay, a player in these positions with this gun should get this amount of kills per map. And if they don't, then there might be a lot of other reasons that dual swing covers. But I think it's really important to at least try and look at it. And I think a lot of it is baseball, right? Where it's kind of the wins above replacement player. Yes. And I think probably all three of us have tried to recreate this at one point or another. And I think that just something like that, that's just really simple. It's like, how often, if you have this player, like how many wins does he just give you over a season? And I think stats like this are much better at doing that. And it's one of the kind of regrets I have with 3.0 is I think there was just too much going on at once. But I would have much rather moved to a kind of a differential model at the same time. Instead of keeping kill rating and survivor rating as separate, I think you kind of want kind of a KD rating almost of eco-adjusted kill differential. But
by the way, in general, even though we're all talking as though we agree with fans, we're trying to make the gods. I actually want to just have all these stats. I want them all to exist separately. I think they all serve a role. And in fact, as I pointed out earlier, I even think they're actually good shorthands. Like if someone really is a super casual, doesn't get, maybe they just watch the rating at the end of the game and that's all they want to know. It's quickly, wasn't it a good game? Did my favorite player play well? Maybe then they want to dive into like Brisney on a worse team, like EEK can help with that, EEK, whatever. Then here's the thing. I won't even pretend to know what. Even though I do a show where it's essentially like, what is dual swing? All I know is it's just like a better version of round swing. Listen, I barely fucking understand that. So hit me. What is dual swing? What is it?
Yeah, so I'd say it's not even a better version of Roundswing. It's trying to do something different to Roundswing, right? And the reason I like showing, like, my favorite graph style is the one where it's dual swing on the Y and Roundswing on the X-axis, right? The reason for that is because Roundswing tries to measure, like, the quality of, like, the result of the kill, right? Like, what happens after. Whereas a dual swing tries to measure, like, how hard was the actual kill.
Right.
So the way I like to explain it is it's like KD differential, but rather than just being eco-adjusted, it's like situation-adjusted. So it literally looks at things like how close were the players, like what weapons did they both have, like what health and armor levels were there. It's like everything that would sort of be relevant to a fight that you would care about. It takes all of that into account, and it assigns a probability to both players for winning that particular duel or gunfight. And then obviously if they win it, they get, you know, whatever was expected. And if they lose it, they get like theirs, take away the others. And so you essentially end up with like a KD differential because it's a sum. So it like adds up. And what it essentially tells you is, you know, of the fights you were winning, like, were they actually like, were you hitting bangers or were you just eco farming or something? And it's a pretty good shorthand for that. And one thing, my favorite thing about it that I found is that for almost all players, they fall within this range of 100% to minus 100%. That's like 99% of players.
Oh, right, okay.
And you get these some players that fall above this line. It falls like about 120%. Who are just genuine superstars. So you get like, it's the line where above them you get like Donk, Monacy, Zywoo.
But it's like, to say it the other way around, it's almost impossible you could be above that line without being a superstar player, right?
Yeah, it basically like baked in is almost like this alien threshold where if you're above that, you are one of a kind, if you know what I mean. And I think that's great because you take that combined with the actual impact of those kills on the round, and you end up with something that's like, for one 2D graph, it's probably the closest anyone kind of can get to an eye test.
Sure.
Right? Because essentially it's like, are they hitting really hard kills, and do those kills matter? If yes, top right. If no, bottom left, you know? And so I think it's incredibly impactful in that way. I will agree, actually, that it's not the most interpretable thing if you don't know what you're looking at.
Yes.
Because I remember actually very vividly.
So I have you let you explain it to me.
Exactly, yeah. And that's, like, Maui found it. Maui found it on his stream. Like, it was a co-stream for like IEM Rio or something.
Okay.
And he was reviewing it. And he was like, what does this mean? Number big equals good? And like, pretty much. Like that kind of.
By the way, that's even a secret I can tell you. I don't know if Nero's ever stopped to think about this because maybe he's too caught in the sauce of what his own work. I'll tell you the reason why dual swing isn't actually critiqued like round swing is, because round swing is always on the same page right next to the KD. And so people just look at the KD. On yours, they don't see the fucking stats. You just have your stat. And so they only come in and only see your stat and interpret. I think that's actually a positive, believe it or not, to have less data that can confuse the fan.
The other thing it's also, I love about it. You go.
Sorry, go.
Or I can, no, it's a separate point. You can go first.
Okay, yeah. The other thing that I really love about it is that obviously, like, all three of us, we're in communities, mostly on Discord, where we have these guys that are like the power users Harry mentioned earlier, right? The people that are, they're in the databases like every day, you know, comparing players. They're like building their own top 20 ratings using our stats, that kind of thing. And the one thing I love about Dual Swing is that literally every single one of those people that's looked at it and like watched a demo and then looked at the Dual Swing, they've all said, yeah, this matches what I think perfectly.
Right.
Like no other stat has done that for me before. I've just like looked at the game, looked at the Dual Swing afterwards. And as long as it isn't like a crazy game, like I think Simple wants an overpass game where he just out-dueled Zywoo four or five times and only Zywoo, like in all head-to-heads. Right. And so he had really high Dual Swing, but like not very high, like KD or whatever. But with the exception of those kind of crazy examples, it does match what most people think about the game.
By the way, I said it earlier, so I want to ask you this, Harry. You said, as I said, you actually were quite forthcoming on the HLTV podcast. Of like, you actually like Dual Swing, right? You actually will hope one day it might even be part of HLTV, right?
Or something equivalent. I mean, I think you'll have to pay Laz a pretty penny for that. But I mean, obviously, I think it's just the demo challenge. And I think, I mean, maybe we'll get onto that because it is kind of the big difference with HLTV in terms of, but I think the other thing I just want to touch on quickly is the huge thing with CS stats is kind of what sample size you're looking at, right? So it's, so something like round swing over a season, like I would use it as soon as the sample's big enough, it kind of evens out the bumps a little bit.
Yes.
And I think dual swing's the same thing, whereas I think kind of the scrutiny you get by being on single map scoreboards, I think just it's very hard for any advanced stat to kind of stand up to that scrutiny, even though you then watch the POV demo and you might see the point of why the KD and the round swing are so different. I think just having it right there, like, it's always going to look weird.
By the way, since you're making me think of it, that's also why we also need advanced stats and modeling, because the other problem you have in esports, I can tell you this is reminding me and triggering me with what the people who already knew the maths and the coding but didn't know CS did, is, I'll give you a random weird example because this is actually a famous person, and maybe some of you even remember this story. At StarLadder Berlin, the last major before the dreaded online era, we had a guy who's literally a world-famous millionaire poker player. He's called Doug Polk. He's a top player in poker, and he's obviously a maths guy, and he made a whole bunch of tweets that looked really stupid, because what he essentially did was, because he's a poker guy and he uses databases and stats engines, he just put all the data in for like years of CS. So even though, sadly, he ended up like being right but wrong if on this one, his prediction at the beginning of that major was like, why is everyone saying Team Liquid's a favorite? Astralis is going to win this one. Now, he ended up being right by virtue of the games, but here's where he was wrong. He was using like data from 2018, for example, the year before, because he wanted as much sample size as possible. And then and what he didn't realize, and this is why I've always said we need modeling, is it's actually impossible to have the best possible sample size in Counter-Strike, because once you get beyond, I think even past like 3 months sometimes is irrelevant, isn't it? Like, the strats have changed, sometimes even the roles change, the players to even, and by the way, even 3 months might only be like 40 maps sometimes, depends what team we're talking about. So even though the impulse with stats people is make it 100 maps, if you do that, a lot of that suddenly might not mean anything, might be from last year or something. So I also think we're always working with such a tight window. I actually think most people only care about the last month, the last 2 months, really. We're working with such a tight window. We need something that can go between us watching every demo and doing this and having a stat thing. You can't do it just off the numbers, I don't think. I think it's impossible.
The other huge thing is that it's not football and the rules change all the time.
That's another good
point. So 3.0 comes out and then a month later Valve completely changed the economy. And yes, just all of the kind of underlying percentages just a kind of change immediately. And you're like, well, we can't even fix this because we need to wait for there to be enough data of the new kind of thing. And I think it's the same for when new maps come out as well. So like Cash is out now. There's no data on Cash since 2018 or something. Like, we're going to have to wait 6 months before Groundswing is using Cash data and not just kind of the average of everywhere.
And then it's removed.
And then it'll be gone.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's just a complete waste of time to even update rating. And it's also the thing of, okay, we could update rating using the new percentages from the new game because now there's enough data, but then all of the old stuff changes. And it's like, why is it Donk's 170 still 170? So it's just, there's so many things in CS where you're just not in control, basically, of the situation. And all of these advances, like Jewel Swing, like how the hell is Jewel Swing going to deal with Cash? It has no data. Like, it's just, are you going to put Facet data in it for now? Like, what are you going to do for these 2 months where there's just nothing for Jewel Swing to go off almost?
Yeah, no, I will unironically use Facet data, because the nice thing about Jewel Swing is that you kind of need a mix of like all levels of play, right? Because in order to know, like, if this player facing off against this player with these weapons at this distance on this map, in order to like have a good enough estimate of that, you don't just want to train it on the pros, because maybe the pros like approach, you know, a certain fight a different way to like your average Facet player or something. So yeah, I think actually it is completely fine, but no, that is a big problem. Like, I agree.
Yeah, and that's the problem with Groundswing as well. Like, every time you add a factor, because you're always wanting to add context, right? You want it to know that the bomb's down, because that completely changes the situation. But every time you do that, you're reducing the sample size that the kind of underlying percentages are based on. So there's always that balance of kind of adding as much context as possible and then also keeping the sample size high. And I think what Luz's stuff basically does is just train a... I don't fully understand. But as far as I'm aware, it's like you just train a model to kind of be able to fill the gap. But I'm sure you can tell us more. Is that basically how it works?
Yeah, I mean, it depends on specifically like where the sample size gap is. Because, yeah, sometimes you have what they call unbalanced training data, right? Which is, like you mentioned, there might only be like 7 examples of a specific round like situation. And so, you know, it's basically random noise if that situation was 100% of the time or not, right? So you essentially can't use that. So you have to kind of like approximate from similar situations and make sure that it's kind of like a gradient and it's not too wild. And then this is why like what I do takes so much time, because it's not as simple. When people talk about AI, obviously at the moment they're thinking of like ChatGPT and all this stuff, right? It could not be further away from like just plugging stuff into an LLM and like seeing what it says, like the kind of work that I'm doing, right? Because I'm doing I'm basically doing glorified statistics more than anything else. And I basically have to, like, when I was training my dual swing model, I had on my left monitor a demo. I had the current, like, estimates on the right from what the model was thinking for each dual. And I was painstakingly watching every dual and, like, calibrating based on what I was thinking in my head so that it kind of looked reasonable, right, to expectations. And there would be some situations where, like say you have an AWP in pit on Dust 2, for example, that's looking at the guy on A site. I know as a CS player that, like, the guy that takes that fight on the guy that's, like, back goose or something is probably going to win it if he's got an AWP most of the time because the distance is really high. But if the actual sample size of, like, that fight is only, like, 2, and, like, there was one situation where I think Rain, like, jumped across and Deagle headshot a guy with an AWP in that pit. And that's, like, the sample size for that. Like, you can get these really ridiculous outcomes, right? And so you have to make sure that you're, like, not just taking really hard-coded samples, but rather it's like a gradient and you're using your own brain and eyes to, like, to check it.
Just to, like, butt in on the LLM point, it's a good invention, but definitely double check what it puts out before you post it, because then it makes stuff up.
Yeah.
PGL. But yeah, that's all I want to add.
And the gag is, when you then say to it, you've given me the wrong thing, goes, yes, of course, you've identified that I was wrong on that, and I did give you a compliment, but I'll do it right next. Yeah, no, the joke is actually, that's the real service people should sell to super fans. If you should be able to buy an LLM coded version for your favorite player that just gives you the corpus to why actually Zima was always better than Donk every game. Just make them, if people don't know, that's the $1 million idea here, boys. Not all this brilliant
stuff. And just make them stand.
Yeah. Of course, exactly. Yeah,
yeah.
I mean, the gag on that one is we can even merge the two together. If it can't find any pro data on why Z was better than Donk, just go on the face it demos. He has all those 50 bombs, right? As they always inform me, I always make that joke that every time he's a bad tournament, his fan just posts, like, look at this one where he drops like 55 kills in a face game. It's like, all right, mate, whatever. I'll give you the training footage of Ronaldo. Shall I? What are we doing? Like,
yeah. What's his RuneScape rating? Yeah.
By the way, before we go on, I have one quick thing I want to say right now, just because he's being a bit British in doing this, but, like, Nero does always downplay shit. Like, oh, I'm sort of a guy, you know, someone else quoted it for me and it's not as good. Yeah, but here's the thing, mate, this chat wouldn't be happening if you hadn't have done that, though. You had to go first, in a sense. You had to lead the way. And one thing you did, and this is why it's actually good that you're not a super stats nerd expert guy in that sense, I think you actually helped the layman get into this topic and make it simple enough that they could start to see, why would I be interested in advanced stats, or why wouldn't I want to just look at KD? I think that's a big thing you did.
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, that is kind of... But you never want to be the guy talking about XG at the pub, do you? Like, there's always the balance.
True.
Like, I think the stuff that I try and do is always trying to just stop just short of the kind of... Because dual swing, I mean, I love dual swing, but I still think the day that it... I mean, hopefully it does, but the day it gets put on, like, HLTV single map scoreboards, like...
Oh, people are going to lose their minds.
Sports mode on for, like, 5 years.
It's going to be mental. It's going to be mental.
Like, I've had 2 years, and I'm like, just start turning it off now.
Of course.
But no, the dual swing is going to completely break people's minds. Because I always think of, there was this one EMA game where, I mean, he had no impact at all in gun rounds, but every time he had a deagle, he got, like, 2 kills. And his rating 3.0 was, like, 1.7, because the eco adjustment is just like, oh, he's just deagling AWPers the whole game on train or something. But he'd lose, like, 1v4 clutches, 3-1 deagues first.
Right.
And his round swing was bad, but his dual swing would probably have been insane. And I just think you just look at things like that and you're like, there's just no way to actually account for stuff like that. So I think it's always the way of, you're always going to need the kind of human element tossed in at the end of some of these things. And I think it is just, I think Fool's Errand is the right way to talk about 3.0. And it probably reflects in how I talk about my own work. Because it just, when you take on a project that big, you're just so aware of all of the kind of the holes in it, like, the whole time, are just the holes that you can't even fix a lot of the time. And I think a lot of that is the log versus demos, because, I mean, people lose their minds when the MVP is not out instantly, right? Like, we have to look at the data after the last lap. But imagine if we were waiting for a demo, it's like the TO to upload the demo, and then we need to let the model look at it. Then we need to, like do people want 2-hour delays for MVPs? Like, because that is what we're talking about here in terms of, do you want the best available data, or do you want a quick decision so that you can give the guy the medal before he fucks off back to the hotel? Like we don't want to be going to the airport to give them the medal.
No.
Like, you don't want to do that. So it's, there is always, always, always going to be a balance between, like, the perfect ideal world and what you can do at pace. And I think that's going to be the biggest challenge in CS in the next few years in terms of the data stuff is being able to kind of use it quicker. And I genuinely don't really know how that is going to be possible. But I think that's the way that kind of HLTV gets to the next step, is when we move away from log files. Because for all, and because even Btrans recently, you had a thing, right, where you looked at, I can't remember whose stats it was, but you're like, yeah, we're missing 100 kills in this sample. Just don't know where they've gone. Just demos have just lost them. Right. Like, demos just have problems. It's, like, there's a
it's
reason.
It's probably just admins that didn't record the demo or didn't press play. I don't really know how recording demos even works. Right. I just parse them. But yeah, they are sometimes just missing rounds or missing parts. I wanted to give a shout out to all the TOs out there, because we're working on a perfect year now. Like, I've gone through every single 8-year plus event for this year, and this is the first season that we've had that there's no missing map. No,
and also shout out to them for giving the demos up for free. They could keep that themselves and not release it to us.
We Messi also always likes to say, well, we couldn't, like, no one can sell demos because it's Valve's property. Like the only person who could put a paywall on demos is Valve, and that just means there's always going to be a chance for people. Like, every time I get messaged by someone like, oh, like, how do I get into this? Like, can I have access to HLTV's API? And I'm just like, no, we don't have one. Just download the demo. Like, please download the demo. Because as someone who, I mean, it's not even an API. I just have, like, a little stats export. Yes, there's a million columns in stats export, but there's so much missing. Like, there is so much more that these two guys have. And it just makes me quite jealous, basically. So I think that's why a little bit modest about it, maybe, is just because when you're so kind of engrossed in something and you're so much looking for the right answer, you're always kind of aware that you don't have it yet. And now I just wish I did machine learning at uni instead of history or something.
I wanted to mention, if you do download the demos and you do make up a stat or find something, tag us on Twitter. We will repost it if it's good, or give feedback. It's like...
Yes.
We don't really gatekeep. We don't try to say, hey, this is my space. Yes. I'm not going to do that retweet because it's too good. I'm scared for my job. That's what loses.
I think that's even one of the most positive things about actually the community of stats people is there's a famous saying in, like, Japanese culture that says nobody is smarter than everyone is, as in collectively. Like, that's why I say I don't want it to be which is the best. I want all these things to exist at once. And I actually think it's cool, as we're saying, just like I said about podcasts earlier, if someone has their own angle, because I'll tell you the obvious angle I work from here. I'm going to guess you guys are in a similar boat, so let me know if so. I already have my eye test. I already have my own biases. I already have the things I prefer in the game and value above others. What I want to know is, like, either are there stats that support or tell me maybe that's not accurate, or even better, I always say stats make way better questions than they make answers. I almost also use stats. Like, if Btrams does one like that, where it's like an interesting EEK one for, like, who has the best deagle or whatever or something, that might be different from what I think stylistically is the best deal. That'll make me think of a question. That's like someone on a show giving me a great counterpoint. It's like, okay, cool, that's something to think about, actually.
Yeah, it's like that. What podcast is it where they always ask at the end, like, when did you change your mind recently? And I think anyone who works in stats has to change their mind all the time, basically, because there's always going to be something. Like, even, like, I think Sphinx was the one recently. Like, just the narrative around Sphinx is so established because of
Apex. That he's a beta or whatever, but he's way more aggressive than
I mean, even my plebby basic HLTV stats were telling me that actually in Maz, he's getting traded way too much to be a beta anymore. And then I think
he has like 18% opening kill stat or something. Like, again, people think he's some boomer. That's some like 3-year-old narrative at this point in it, I know.
I mean, even that stat, like, I know you love the little entry stats. Sure. But it's obviously very different to bombsite entering. And I think Luz has literally like first into bombsite. And I remember doing an article, I think it's like 2023 or something, where I literally looked at TD replays and just literally pressed a tick box in a spreadsheet every time someone was the bombsite entry. And now Lars could just do that instantly. And you look at it, and for Sphinx, like, he actually does have to do a little bit of that. Like players are much more fluid than our definitions for them are. And they do also change. Like, players are able to change. I think it's even more possible in CS than in a lot of other sports in terms of player profiles change. And if you're just kind of stuck thinking about a player how when you first saw them, like, you're always going to kind of be lagging behind stats which are more objective and can actually just point you in the right direction every time.
That's why the war stat, the wins above replacement stat, is, in my opinion, so hard to achieve, because what's the replacement position of a given player? It fluctuates from map to map, from series to series, even sometimes. Like, if someone changes the way... their position or whatever, or even how to quantify who's the entry and who's the lurker, whatever. Like, this is probably one of the biggest humps for the future. Probably Lust has something like from 4 years ago that has that already, but whatever. But that's one thing that I feel like we need to figure out, how to quantify those positions like concretely, and
yes,
figure out a framework on which we can build war, because like Harry mentioned before, war is one of those endgame stats that we would all like to see.
Yes. By the way, this actually comes to what I thought, because we have limited time on this show, I thought would be the last big topic, and I want everyone to go wherever they feel like on this, someone we'll just run up to the time. It's basically the thing I always say, that is the reason why I do the show with Lars, is I actually think his work, which funny enough builds on everyone else's work in the call, what I actually think it will change about Counter-Strike, because it has already begun to change, is how people think about the roles. You've all heard me say this 1 million times, because I'm the person a million years ago on YouTube who came up with the basic concepts of not only like what roles are there, but what's the general fit in a team. And I always tell people, I'm not doing that like some like the most like granular aspect. I'm trying to be as big picture as possible, because the famous stat, the famous line I always heard from basketball is, in every basketball team, by the way, when you have a starting five, you list them as the five traditional positions, even if they don't play like that. Even if, for example, actually the ball handler's a fucking 7 foot tall guy, even if actually the guy who's the center is like what would be a power. The point is, the reason you list five roles is so that the layman can understand the concept of how the team game works, right? But beyond that, you get, like I just gave it in that example, you're going to get into all sorts of territory where, for example, I'll give you some CS examples that'll be good to spur it, and then you guys can go where you want. I'll tell you two examples quite recently that we've all started to really like paradigm change our thinking on. So one is, what is an anchor? Because as pointed out by you guys last year, how can we have Mezzi versus Rops as anchor of the year if they're both in the same fucking team at the same time? Like, at some point one of them isn't anchoring, or he's doing the easier anchoring, or for example, how are we contrasting that guy with Heather Yard if he really does anchor all the time, or Yimfat or something like that? Like, and then similarly, I'll give you two other examples. If you look at AWPers and all you do is look at the kills and the HLTV rating, well, spoiler, there's actually a secret that fucks the people like the Molodoys in the world up the ass, which is, if he actually buys the AWP all the time, you know what you'd think a great AWPer would do, he's not going to be able to get the numbers that Zewu does, because Zewu's going to have a T-side Inferno where he just has an AK and tears everyone's arse up with an AK. He's not going to have to take some super hard AWP duel, but the overall stat isn't going to, because unless we have a no AWP kills stat, it's not going to take that into account. And people are, who are fans, just going to compare Molodoy rating, Zewu rating, and they go, right, Molodoy is a worse AWPer, whereas maybe in my analogy he's actually AWPing more in harder scenarios. And then the last one is clearly obviously entry role. As pointed out actually in this conversation, that is probably the most reductive label given to anyone, because it makes people think all entries are equal, and even worse, as pointed out by Nero, all opening kills are entry kills, which they're definitely not. I mean, I'll give you an example. I remember back in 2021, Nico used to have like donk type stats, but if you ever went and looked, that's because they just played a slow game where Nico got to take like mid rounds, for example. He wasn't just running in like fucking donk or like old fur or something. And then similarly, and Loz always points this out, even all entries aren't born equal. There's a type of entry, by the way, that helps you take map control. That might not be the guy who then runs in the bomb site, though, when four people are going to shoot him in his head. And then, obviously, this is, I'll give you the example of a player for this one, that you will get completely lost in the sauce if you just say, these guys are all on entry island, and that's totally all unique and identical. So when you make your super team, what entry do you want? Well, give me your Kindar. Mate, you're going to have a really bad team if that's your hard entry. Like, he isn't a hard entry. In fact, he clearly doesn't want to do that, and that's not really even his strength. So I actually think, I thought this is the last topic we can talk about, give whatever thoughts you want. I actually think the area where stats can be really important in the future, narratively and for what we care about, is helping us like define different types of roles and then figure out things. This is what I do with the show. How do they fit together? How would you construct a team so that you don't end up in this analogy with like five players in football who all want to receive the ball but can't make the shot for themselves? Like, that's how we're currently all making teams. By the way, I include myself in this. I remember last year thinking that Team Liquid, like, it looks great. Now I realise almost none of it would have worked. It never could have worked. Like, so they were literally lacking roles that would have set other players up and allowed them to succeed. So what do you guys think on this? Because I do think this is what people want stats for. They want it to give them like, they make everyone smarter, essentially, help us redefine how we think about the game.
Yes. Yeah. I think this is mostly like my specialty, right? This is mostly what I've been working on for the past couple of years. Mostly like, again, behind the scenes stuff, but now I'm trying to obviously provide this information through any format that I can. But one of the worst things that I've seen recently, I can't remember which TO it is, but one of them, they always have like these roles next to the players when it's like the pre-match. And one of them is like entry rifler. And every time I see that, I want to bang my head against the table because it's like, okay, what do you mean? What are you talking about? Sure. Like, what kind of entry? Are they running into the bomb site or are they like one of these star aggressive space takers? Because depending on which one you look at, they're either the highest expected KPR for the T side or like the lowest, like maybe second lowest next to the IGL, right? So it depends entirely. Like, there's an ocean between those two and they're getting condensed to this one word, which is just incredibly silly, right? And there are a million different ways that you can break down roles. Like, the way that I like to do it is I like to go down to the lowest level possible and just look at where are they and what are like their responsibilities in the average round. So are they entering bomb sites? Are they taking map control? Are they doing more of the utility work? Are they, you know, what weapons are they using? There are all these things that you can factor in to say, yeah, this guy is like a selfless, aggressive trade fragger or something. You know what I mean? Like, you can kind of pin them together like this to build a profile for these players. And it will always be infinitely better than just saying aggressive rifler or like entry rifler. I think it is very hard to convey that information, especially because most of these TOs like don't have someone that has these models.
Yeah,
that
yeah.
Can, like,
the producer just isn't thinking about these things, of course.
But what I will say, and what my favorite, even though I've only been, you know, doing these shows with you for like a couple of months now, and like on being on these podcasts and doing stuff with Ready for not that long, I have started to see already people on different podcasts, on broadcasts, mentioning these terms that I've been trying to push so hard, because I think they are like inherently valuable.
Which, by the way, is what we all want as well. We don't feel like you're nicking out. Look, if you can reference, if you remember who said it, but do it. We all want this to proliferate, right?
Yeah, I don't care about my name being attached to it. I care about the idea sort of entering the consciousness of the CS community, because when they have these terms, it's like the Rumpelstiltskin principle. If you have a name for something, you have power over it. You can manipulate it with your own mental models and you can come to a better understanding about what's happening in the game. So I think it's a win for everyone.
Yeah, I mean, it was one of my first actual proper jobs within HD was to try and come up with the names for all the roles. And I mean, it is infinitely difficult for this exact reason. And I think the most important thing is you just want as vague as possible so that you can kind of fit people in. I mean, we actually had a call the other day about renaming Anchor because there's so many star anchors that it's just not even, it's just not right anymore. But I think just generally like having the opener kind of support closer kind of tag, it still is very useful for people in terms of when you are building a team, that is generally what teams do condense down to.
Yes.
But then I was thinking the other day, like if we were doing awards for Astralis 2018, like, is Zipix closer of the year or support of the year? Like, isn't Mavis the support on that team, really? Yep. Like, if we're doing the Mezzy Rops thing?
Yep.
So it's always fluid and it's always difficult. I think one idea I had years ago and kind of never really finished it was, you know, in Football Manager, how you have, like, fullback and then you set, like, attack or defend or something like that. And I think that's kind of what I've always wanted to do. I just never finished it. And basically you have like opener, but then you have like Flamesy might be the entry opener and Nico or Zantares might be the space taker, map control, like late round lurk type players. Yes. And I think that's the way I would do it if I spent a bit more time on that instead of looking at fucking EVPs for the last 3 years. But that's kind of the way I think it has to go, is you have to have a very vague catch-all opening way, because you still want five players, five roles, I think.
Yes.
And you still have to kind of fit into that framework, even if it's obviously always going to be really difficult. And then you kind of have different stuff added on to each role. So I think that's kind of how I've started seeing it. And I think if I had lots of stats, it'd be much easier to start sorting people into those categories. So maybe one day, hopefully.
Yeah, I've started downloading and all the older demos from CSGO. And I tried I basically just chatted with an AI like Claude to basically come up with a system to, you know, go as in depth as we can to measure something like that, just to sort of feel out the waters, since I'm still just beginning that journey. And for the older years, for 2016, for example, Taco was labeled as a lurker and not a support.
Oh, wow, like, right. Okay. Right.
Okay. Like, again, it's just
they
like
their entry as well. So.
Yeah, pre-alpha version of this modeling.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's why I feel like it's also going to be a challenge to backtrack into history and sort of relabel those players, because again, from my initial exploration, there didn't used to be such settler roles.
No,
it
no.
was just everyone is yes. sort of a one big mush. So,
but it's yeah. weird. People sometimes ask me in my like AMAs on Twitter, what were the roles of this team in 2003? I'm like, your mind, bro. No one even had any. What do you like? I guess one was slightly the one attacking earlier and that, but no, even they themselves didn't have a role. They weren't thinking along these paradigms. We invented all that years later, actually, funny enough, from the outside as fans and people. And then it became a thing. Because as you're pointing out here, here's the last thing I'll say. Maybe this is a naive hope, but it is my dream. My actual dream, really, by the way, isn't even just that this affects discourse and what fans think of what the industry is. It's actually that teams start doing this, because put it this way, one of the reasons I do the show Roster Mechanic, I'll give you the example. Two of the biggest esports organizations in the world with a long tenure in Counter-Strike, Team Liquid and G2, essentially built squads in 2025 that on paper I also thought looked good in terms of names, that just didn't function. They actually just had players who had like crazy overlap, and then they had certain players who just weren't in the team that you needed to make the team operate. And so I actually just think we were all in too simplistic a way of thinking about the game before, and I hope in the future we can use this sort of like ability to zoom in or to actually specialize what a role is. And as you even say, by the way, even with a role, are you a star within that role? Are you aggressive within that role? Do you play more sort of structure in that? I think this is actually really important, even for teams, because then teams themselves will be better and better constructed. We will have to have a whole season where a team just lacks a clear role.
Since time immemorial, great artists have been supported by patrons who believed in their work and wanted to contribute to their efforts. Well, what's more fitting than the greatest esports content artist being supported by my patrons, the Skrilluminati? So this video and the others on my channel was kindly supported by Toucan, Nikki, Jason, Jensen Gore, and you know it, a special thanks always goes out to Jerky's Minion. Would you like to ask a question in my video AMA? Want teasers? See who the upcoming guests are? Maybe you want to suggest a topic or a guest for my content, or take part in one of those lengthy discussions where you get to set the topic. If any of these perks appeal to you, or others, put your money where your mouth is and join the Skrilluminati today. Where? In the description box, there is a Patreon link.